Now let's move on to our third module, which we're going to look at the process of administering Office 365 and particularly dealing with the administrator roles. What we're going to cover are, what are the administrator roles? What are the different sorts of administrator that you can implement within Office 365? Things like password administrator, billing administrator, and so on. We'll then talk about password management. Now, password management in Office 365 is a lot simpler than you've previously had if you're running Active Directory. We're not talking about a full configuration of password policy, but we'll see what options that you can configure within the user interface or within PowerShell. And then finally, we're going to move on to talk a bit about rights management. Now, rights management is, in some ways, quite a complex subject. We're really just going to be sort of giving a bit of an outline on it, but it's something that you need to think about and plan to, if you're going to configure that within your own environment. So talking about managing our administrator roles, we'll look at the various administrator roles, see what's actually available, go through the process of assigning those roles, and Martin's going to demonstrate that for us. Then we're going to look at what happens if you've got a delegated admin, which is where you've got, for example, a managing partner who's managing Office 365 for you. And then finish off with some common practices, common errors and best practices at the end. So what are our administrator roles? Within Office 365, we have a relatively straightforward roles-based administration model. What we've got is a number of these different administrator types, particularly the most important one, of course, being the global administrator. So when you first set up Office 365, the person that you install, or the person who sets up Office 365, who registers their account, they are made a global administrator. So they can perform basically all administrative tasks within Office 365. And they're also an organizational admin as far as Exchange Online is concerned, and the same with SharePoint and Link Online. But as you can see here on this slide, we've got a number of other roles as well. So things like a billing administrator who can make license purchases, manage our subscriptions. If you've got any support tickets, they can manage those as well and monitor the health of the service. If you've got a managing partner, though, in place, in other words, when you signed up for Office 365, you clicked on a link that a Microsoft partner sent you, you will not have the billing administrator role. The billing administrator role job is actually taken on by your managing partner. We then have password administrators, so that's like a help desk person who can reset passwords, can manage service requests for help, and monitor the health of the service. We then have a service administrator, which is separate to the password administrator, so that's again more like the back end support, if you like, whereas the password administrator does the user facing support. And we also have this user management administrator, and again, they can create users, groups, reset passwords, manage our service requests, and monitor the health as well. So there's quite a bit of sort of compartmentalization between the different administrator functions in Office 365.
Yes, and users don't have to worry that when you assign a password administrator role that they can change the passwords of global administrators. So it is really nice compartmentalized for those users. Password administrator is something that help desks typically would use, and you would delegate that right so that people can manage password passwords for those users.
Indeed. And of course, there are some sorts of things like self-service password resets for administrators and so on. So there's lots of different approaches that we've got in terms of setting administrators and then how those can manage themselves and who can. So for example, a lower level administrator can't simply create themselves as being a global admin. Okay, if you're a password administrator, you can't make yourself into a global admin. You have to be a global admin to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so again, most of the password administration, sorry, most of the administration account, the administration itself, you'll be doing through Office 365 Admin Center. Yes, you can do it through PowerShell. The fact is that again, these tend to be one-off tasks. You know, it's sometimes doesn't make quite so much sense to go through all the effort of learning what all the PowerShell commands are and the options and the switches within PowerShell. You might as well simply do it within the admin center itself. But we've got listed there on the slide some of the commands. So that's like get MSOL role, get MSOL user role, and so on. Remember, of course, that you do need to do your connect MSOL service command before you can run these particular commands. So what Martin's going to show us is how do we assign some of those administrator roles?
Great. So first of all, this is a user function. So I'm here in the user as part of the dashboard. And I can click on any user. So I'm going to look at a user, you, Anthony.
Indeed.
I can assign you to one of those roles. So tell me, how much are you willing to pay for being one of these?
I'll take a global administrator, please, Martin.
Okay.
And I'll need an alternate email address.
Yep.
Okay, and that's part of the administrator password reset function. So if you'd like to put in there Anthony with an H.
Anthony
S at contentmaster.com. And that's the password that say that if I need to self-service reset my password, that's where the request is going to be sent. So you can save that. And whoopee, I'm an administrator. Would you like to just do the same for a billing administrator and a user administrator from a couple of our other users there?
Okay. I'm going to make Peter. So you choose Peter. Go to settings, assign a role. And I'm going to make him a billing administrator. And I'm just going to put in a dummy email address here so that it's got something.
Yeah, it does require, once you set the administrator role, it does require an email address for you. And save that.
Okay. So it's really easy to do those.
How might you just do a bulk email enabling, administrator enabling with in Office 365, just so that as you can, you know, we don't have to use PowerShell for bulk processes. No, on the actual users themselves. If we multi-select the users, wanted to show people, you know, what the interface was and how you can change the roles or you can add to the roles that are currently configured.
Okay.
And again, so if we just edit that up across on the on. If you just edit that on the. Once you've selected a couple, and then on the right there, you'll see the edit.
Yes.
That's the one. Excellent. Okay. So again, no, and this time we need to step through step through the wizard. So when we get to the settings, now we've option for no changes requested, not make them not administrator, or make them, yes, all the selected people administrators. And again, if we make those user management administrators, and next, and away we go. So that's now been assigned. So there we've seen how we can create individual administrators, and we can also bulk assign administrators. And you can do, there's similar commands within PowerShell to do that. My own feeling is that you probably won't use PowerShell to carry out that particular task. It's so easy to do, even for multiple administrator passwords. And again, it's not something that you do on a very regular basis. It's something you typically do every so often. You'd set it up, so much more likely that you're going to be doing that through the Office 365 admin console. So talking about delegated administration, now we have mentioned this briefly already. What happens is with delegated administration, this is effectively an automated setting up of a Microsoft partner as a managing partner. So what happens is if let's say my partner has contacted you and you've said, yes, I am interested in Office 365 Pilot or interested in having you as my managing partner, what you do is the partner will send an offer email through to your email address. You then click on the link. The partner will have already created the account for you. Okay, so you navigate to the authorization page. And again, if you just wanted to bring up the delegated partners page as well on there, Martin, you authorize the partner and then you start your trial and subscription, and you'll see that partner will be a managed partner. So we've got two administration roles for managed partners. Either you can have full administration, so that means the partner can do everything. So that would be, let's say, you're a relatively small organisation and you want to have the partner simply manage everything and just be done with it, then they would be made a full administrator. Or you can have them just acting in a help desk role. So, for example, you're keeping the other roles in-house. So if you just want to flick across onto that Office 365 page there. And then in the delegated admins, that's where your delegated admins are going to appear in Office 365. And again, that's what happens when you click the link. They're then included. And you can then say to them, well, actually, I don't want to go with this partner anymore. You know, I don't want them managing my stuff. And delete them from this particular role. So some common errors then. Typically, common errors are, as with all administrator accounts, giving people the wrong level of administrator access. So it is extremely important that people only get the level of access that they need to have. So if all they're going to be doing is managing user accounts and managing passwords, that's all they need to be. They do not need to be a global administrator, regardless of how much they might sort of complain about it. All they need to be is either a user administrator or possibly a password administrator. This does require, of course, quite a good bit of planning to begin with. You need to think, right, who have I got? What job are they going to need to do? What is the least level of access that I can give them to enable them to do that particular job? Following a reference model, that will depend on whether you're actually using an internal reference model, whether you're using something like MOF or ITIL. If you've already got that type of reference model and architecture implemented within your environment, again, follow the best practice recommendations for that particular arrangement. In terms of best practices, we've already mentioned about making sure that you've planned your administrator roles. Again, we've mentioned documentation. Audit those roles. Make sure you know who is doing the jobs. Make sure that they are the right people to be doing those jobs and that you trust them to do those jobs as well. You need to keep those up to date. If somebody's moved to another part of the organisation, let's say they've moved up to management, it might be that it's no longer appropriate for them to be the administrator. And make sure that you have an approval and a sign-off for your administrator roles. You know, you're not the only one left holding the baby if it all goes horribly wrong. So that within the organisation, there is responsibility throughout the organisation for the administration design. And a final point I will make, of course, is don't forget to have more than one global admin. So almost your first task after installing your client tenant account is, let's create another global admin account. Because if your first one becomes inaccessible, then that's you locked out of the tenant.
Yeah, you may have to abandon your tenant at that stage and create a new one. So it is a really good advice to create a second global administrator and make sure that you have that backup to go and maybe another person in your organization to do that.
Indeed. And of course, that would be very embarrassing, and we don't want any of that sort of stuff going on. So make sure you've got a second admin account. Right. So moving on, talk a bit more about password management then. Now, I've mentioned that there are certain features within Office 365 where you don't get the equivalent level of control that you would have within an Active Directory environment. And password management is one of those. So what we're going to be looking at, we'll look at how we manage our passwords, what a password policy means in Office 365, how we can manage those with PowerShell as well, and then Martin's going to do a quick demonstration of changing those passwords and setting the password policy, and then we're going to finish off again with some common errors and best practice guidelines. In terms of password policy, there are only two things that you can configure in Office 365. You can't change password complexity. What you can change, though, is your number of days before a password expires and the number of days of warning that you get. Now, I think is it 730 days?
Yes.
The maximum? Yeah, 730 days. So, I mean, that's the thick end of
that's
how many years? Two years. Yes, of course it is, isn't it? So you can have 2 years at the maximum, or there is an option that you can set for password not to expire. Mm-hmm. So why do we think that might be? Why do we think we might have an account that we don't, where we don't want the password to expire?
Well, this could be a resource mailbox or something like that that you want to access with a application or something like that. That would be a reason for. Or you might have a user that insists that they never want to change their password.
Yes, absolutely. So it's the equivalent of service accounts. If you've got a sort of more complex environment where you're, let's say, you're tying in, you might have a line of business application hosted in Windows Azure. You might be tying that into Office 365. You know, those are the sort of options where you might want to have a password that doesn't expire. But the general practice is for user passwords. I mean, the default settings are 90 days for password expiry, 14 days for notification. You might want to drop the notification time. I mean, I find 14 days a bit sort of irritating because it's not close enough that I really need to change it, but it's far enough away so that I'll keep ignoring all the messages and then I'll get caught because the password has expired and I haven't changed it. So I tend to think, you know, make it something more like 5 days and they'll think, oh, yes, I better change my password now, rather than 14 days. I think, oh, well, I can put that away for 2 weeks and don't need to think about it, and then they forget.
Yeah, and you will probably follow a model that you've been using in your organization for a while. So if your users are used to getting a notification 14 days ahead, then you may want to keep doing that. But as you say, it can be annoying.
Absolutely. So again, this is a good chance to think about what's your password policy within your own environment, within your Active Directory environment, and then look at synchronizing that with Office 365. And that will become much more important when we start talking about DirSync and SSO. So when we reset a user password, what the user gets is a new temporary password, which they then have to change as soon as they log on. But for admins, we do also have, you can either reset your password yourself by using that link that was pointed, you remember when we set up the admin role on a user account, we included a password in there, and that link is what's used to reset the password, or you could sort of beg one of your fellow admins to reset it for you and maybe buy them a cup of coffee or something for their trouble. Now, we can do all of this password management through PowerShell. There are probably, in terms of bulk user password management, then PowerShell is a good thing to do. Maybe if you're just managing individual users, it's probably not particularly worthwhile. But what we can do is things like set our password expiry and our password expiry notification options. And we also have this option to remove the never expires setting. There is another setting which I strongly would not recommend people use, which is to remove the requirement for password complexity. And again, you can do that with individual accounts, but it's not a UI setting. It's something that's only available in PowerShell. You can use PowerShell to show you which user accounts are set to not expire. And so there's this option for removing your strong password complexity requirements is really not a recommended process. So what Martin's going to show you now is a demonstration of changing passwords, and we're also going to look at setting a password policy. So we'll start off with this in the user interface.
Okay, so we're in the admin center for Office 365, and in here we have all our users. I can select a user and then go to reset passwords for this user. So very easy. Again, I have the option here to send the password to the administrator if I want to. I can unselect that if I want to, and then I would click on reset password, and it will go and reset the password for that user, and the user will then have to go and use that temporary password the next time they log on, and they will be forced to change their password the next time they use the service.
And they'll be forced to change one again to a password that fits the Office 365 password policy, unless you've set that don't use the complexity requirements.
Yep.
The other thing, could you just pop into Outlook, actually, Martin, if you just kind of show people where those password reset messages actually appear. So what we're doing, we're simply using the, we're just clicking Outlook, and that actually takes us into the Outlook web app or Outlook online, as I think it is called now. And there we can see there's my new temporary password message. Yeah. In fact, I think it's just not quite come in yet, has it?
Yeah, actually, I unselected it.
Oh, did you? Sorry, I didn't see that. Yeah. My apologies. Well, anyway, it's a very similar message to the one that you can actually see there, in that it simply just says, you know, this is the new password for this user. So it does kind of mean that there is a sort of permanent record about it. Remember, of course, if you do the password reset through PowerShell, you don't get that email message, so you have to write it down the first time. Okay, have you got anything else you can, how about something on the...
Another thing that you can change, maybe I can just show you a quick way of getting there. So when you go to users and computers, there's two ways of changing the password policy for Office 365. You have a shortcut in your users and computers. You can say change the password expiry policy, change it now. You can click there. And this actually jumps to the server settings password tab where you can change passwords. So in here, if we enter, say we want to make this 999, it's going to say, sorry.
Yes, indeed.
It's got to be 730 days,
yes,
2 years.
Yes, that's too long.
So just a word of warning, if you tell users that their password's going to change every 2 years, they're going to grow very attached to that password. And it's going to be a sad day for them to change that password.
And of course, you say, well, so what we're going to do is change that to 730, and are you going to change that number of days there as well?
Yeah, I think 5 days is a good recommendation.
5 days is a good number, indeed.
And there, that's done.
Okay, so you can see the acknowledgement message there that that's been changed. So are you going to show us how to do that reset then, or change that back with PowerShell?
So... PowerShell, I'm still connected. If I do a get MSOL user, in fact, I'm just going to copy that.
Remember, of course, with PowerShell, you've got this ability to, you know, mark and copy and paste text. That sort of helps speed things up. But of course, you know, you may very well be using the PowerShell IDE as well, which has got lots of other commands, including things like IntelliSense for completion of the PowerShell commands. What we've done there is to show what the we've done a get MSOL user. So it's for our Peter Doe user. What it's doing is basically displaying their name and whether they're licensed or not. So.
Yeah, so I just wanted to confirm that the user does exist.
Indeed.
And again, showing off the beauty of PowerShell, I created one commandlet to check if the user exists, and then I just changed and edited my command by pressing the up arrow, and I could just change that to another command. So in this case, I want to set the user password, and made a mistake. User twice? Wow.
Oh, yes. Okay. So this time, by running the set MSOL user password, what Martin's done is simply said, right, for this user, for Peter Doe, simply change whatever their current password is and reset it. Mm. And there you can see there's their temporary password displayed, but you will not get the email sent under these conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Excellent. Good. Well, thank you very much indeed for that. So let's finish off then with some common errors and best practices. Common errors are typically like not standardizing your password policies. So the recommendation is, you know, at least have your domain environment password should be at least as strong as Office 365. So a minimum of 8 characters and also with password complexity enabled. That will then reduce the culture shock of users coming across to Office 365. And you know, if they're not used to remembering complex or longer passwords, then this will, you know, if you change it on their Active Directory, get them used to doing that internally, and then they can appreciate more what's happening within Office 365. So again, make sure that you've got a good alignment there between your cloud-based policy and your on-premise policy. If you're using DirSync, then particularly if you're using DirSync with password sync, then of course we end up using effectively what is your policy for in Active Directory becomes the policy for Office 365. And of course, if we're using SSO, single sign-on, then you are using the same username and password across both environments. So our best practices, we need to make sure we've defined our administrator roles correctly. The users, they must know what this password reset approach is. Again, this shouldn't be something that the help desk constantly have to remind them about. They should actually know what the policy is. Standardize your password policies, and then do make sure you enforce strong passwords. There are good business reasons for removing the password doesn't expire option, but there are very rarely any good reasons for removing the strong password requirement. Right, so in our final section now, we're going to talk about administering rights management, or ADRMS. So this is a rights management service that is provided with Office 365. What it enables, so we'll be looking at some of the, we'll give you a quick overview of what it is. We'll see how you plan it. We'll talk about the process for activating and configuring it. Very simple. It's really just a one-click switch on in Office 365 and then switch on in any sort of service that's going to use it. I'll talk about the integration with the three services, with SharePoint, Exchange, and then with the Office service. And then again, finish off with some common errors and best practices guidelines. Martin, how much have you sort of implemented on the rights management side?
So yeah, it's something that not a lot of companies do that I've certainly seen. And in my case, it's something that users don't start off with. They look at Office 365 initially, and then later on they may want to do RMS.
So, I mean, it's interesting because what do you see as being one of the big challenges for user acceptance with RMS?
I think it's getting used to proving your identity, the clients, and so on, and understanding what to do in those cases. So I think it's more the user training that becomes an issue.
You're absolutely right there. User training is a sort of major issue with rights management. People need to understand that, you know, that when they get a rights management protected document, you know, they say, well, I can't copy it. No, because you're not meant to be able to copy it. You know, I can't forward it. No, you're not meant to be able to forward it. They need to understand what the functionality is. So user education is a key part of rights management services, the adoption of rights management services. Office 365 does make it a lot easier because you don't have to mess about with your key distribution servers and all that sort of stuff and your CA environment. That's all provided for you, but you still have to do the end user training. So what does it do? Well, it helps us protect sensitive data by doing things like preventing people from copying data, preventing them from forwarding it. You might stop them from printing. What it doesn't stop them doing is taking a screenshot of their screen. It doesn't stop them from whipping out their Windows phone and taking a picture of the screen that way. So it's a certain level of protection. It does stop them from, you know, passing on a document to people for who might be a little bit too interested in it. Mm. It is a persistent form of protection, so it's both protecting documents that are static and in transit. And I say it uses encryption technologies to do that. It's fully integrated with Office 365 and with SharePoint and Exchange Online as well. So if you can encrypt attachments in Exchange and you can encrypt attachments in SharePoint Online and store those securely on your SharePoint server. Even if somebody was able to access the document, it's still encrypted. They still may not necessarily have rights to open it.
Yeah, the encryption travels with the document.
Absolutely.
So it's not like a traditional file share where you might have access to the file share, and once you have that file, you can do whatever you want with the file. If it's encrypted with RMS, it stays encrypted. You can make a copy of that file, but it's still encrypted.
Yes, of course. And it's not like sort of embedding the password into the document either.
Yes. You know,
it's very, very different from that sort of level of protection. So what do we need to do to plan our RMS? So you need to think about what sort of tenant security groups, what sort of mail-enabled groups are you going to be using to manage these encrypted documents? you need to think about who's going to manage the tenant key. Are you going to manage it, or are you going to pass that management rights across to Microsoft? So there's a decision that needs to be there, probably at a pretty senior level within the organization as to what's going to happen at CIO level or whatever. You need to install the module for PowerShell, and we've been talking quite a bit about PowerShell, and there's lots of modules, and this is another one of them that you need to do in order to run the ADOD RMS commands within against the Office 365 environment. And then you need to activate the rights management. You can do it through PowerShell, but you can just as easily do it with one click through Office 365. But the point about it is, it's easy to activate. It's all the other planning that you have to do to get it right, so that it's so that your rights management deployment happens correctly. Because it's no good just switching it on if then the users don't know what to do when they receive a rights management protected document. So user training, absolutely vital.
This reminds me of that famous movie, with great power comes with great responsibility.
Indeed, great responsibility, absolutely, yes. So in terms of activating, do you just want to quickly pop up the Office 365 environment there? And we'll show you, say, really how easy that is to do. So it's going in through service settings. So if we can show Martin's screen, and it goes into service settings, and there we've got rights management there, and click manage, and then all we need to do is activate it when it comes back. It might prompt us for another login, by the way. I notice It's been a few minutes since we were last in there, so we are expecting to possibly get another login prompt at this point. Oh, in fact, it's actually already activated.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, again, we can just show activation and deactivation. It's a simple switch.
Yep.
And again, we can do that through PowerShell. And so that's the enable AADRM PowerShell's command. If you're managing it with PowerShell, then we need to import the module, send the import module command, import module AADRM, that installs the the rights management component. And then you connect to the service, and then enable, and it's that. But it's you might as well just do it. It's like one click through the UI. It's about three different commands in PowerShell. We've got some administrator roles, and you can do the management of those roles, again, through PowerShell, like adding them, getting them, and removing them. So as you can see there on the screen. but again, that needs to be tied in tightly with your planning to make sure that you've planned these roles correctly. In terms of integration with Exchange Online, then what we do is once we've enabled rights management in Office 365, you then do another connection. In this case, you're going to do a remote PowerShell connection to Exchange Online, which involves a redirect. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on. You configure the key sharing location. In other words, is that going to be with Microsoft? Or is that going to be with your local client? With your tenant environment? And then what we do is that we... it's a TPD. That's like a key, isn't it?
Yeah.
So basically, you're importing a key from your online rights management service. You import that into your tenant account. Enable the rights management itself in Exchange Online. That's another tick box. And then you test the rights management configuration by sending encrypted emails and seeing if your users can decrypt them and then not forward them or not send them on as appropriate, according to which template they've applied. Mm. It's fully compatible with Outlook Web Access and, of course, with Outlook, certainly later versions of Outlook anyway. And what you do is when you send an email, then you have the option to apply that encryption or apply that protection to the email, like company confidential or whatever, and then that might prevent either printing or sending on or whatever. You can also do it at the administrator level by defining what we call a transport protection rule. And the transport protection rule in Exchange Online might be simply to apply information rights management to every outgoing message, and that means everything going out of the organization would have rights management applied.
This is really where rights management becomes really powerful, because customers have the ability to go and configure those Outlook protection rules or the transport rules to automatically apply rights management to messages based on some rule. You know, maybe there's a certain word in that email or a certain subject
Indeed,
line.
Yes.
And then they can apply that rule, or if you send a message to the HR department, and it can be applied automatically. So it becomes easier for the users to implement power rights management, and it makes it easier for them to accept it in your environment. But they still need to know how to deal with those messages.
Indeed. And the important point there to make is that you're only applying rights management to the messages that need rights management. You don't have to do it as a blanket coverage. You can specify if there's a credit card number in there, then information rights management needs to apply. Okay, so in terms of integration with SharePoint Online, and again, it's a fairly simple option just to enable it. What it does, though, is that it encrypts the documents themselves so that users need to have the correct access rights to be able to either download or to view or to print or to whatever it was, edit those documents. And again, you can set that up. You set it up on the SharePoint service level, and then you can enable it or disable it at different sort of libraries and lists and site level within SharePoint Online. And again, there's some of the settings there are shown on the slide. A very, very powerful tool for protecting information, providing greater protection to your organization, making sure that information is not leaking out of the organizational boundaries. In terms of support then on Office, then 2013, 2010, it's fully supported. 2007, not supported. So again, a good reason there for upgrading to the latest version of Office 2000. Going up to the latest version of Office 2013. In other words, the version that comes as a download with Office 365. That's Office 365 Pro Plus. What you would then need to do is to provide your office credentials, your login credentials for your account. It's slightly different with Office 2010 because there's also what you need to do is to install Office, and then you have this RMS sharing application as well. So there's a little add-on that needs to go in there if you've got the 2010 version. And then we have these uses templates, so that there are various sort of predefined templates that you can apply to your messages and make sure that they can't be forwarded, can't be printed, or whatever protection you need to apply to those. So some common errors and best practices then. A lack of administrator knowledge. Yes, you really do need to understand exactly what's going on with rights management to be able to apply it. And also, you absolutely need to grip the end user training. You know, if your users don't know what to do with this, you could end up sort of causing the whole email system to grind to a halt because they simply don't know what to do with these rights protected emails. So it needs to be well thought out, well planned, and well delivered in terms of your user training package there. Make sure that your policies aren't too complex, that you're not just simply setting up rights management for rights management's sake. It does need to be for a very, very good reason. Be aware also of what can happen if you've got non-Microsoft devices. There are certain devices from other vendors that may not necessarily be compatible with rights management. Again, use cases, and you need to test what's currently supported. And particularly if you have a bring your own device policy. In terms of best practices, the best thing is keep it nice and simple and make sure that your implementation fully meets the business needs without causing excessive training requirements and without, of course, introducing excessive complexity. And then need to make sure that the users understand IRM is only for the 2010 or 2013 clients. Okay, so I think that's about that. So we've had a look at the various administrator roles in Office 365. We've talked about the process of configuring password management and how do we administer rights management in Office 365. What we're going to be doing in our next lecture is going on to talk about the Office 365 client itself and see how we use that with Office 365.